Hello, everybody.
Welcome.
Welcome back to Double Indemnity, the podcast. If you are watching the video right now, you can see that our dog is accompanying us today on this.
And she is going to be biting
Chances
me.
Chances are it's going to be chaos. And she'll probably have to go in her crate for a little bit if she gets a little too spicy. But we are back again, episode 13 of Double Indemnity, the podcast, where we discuss and review new movie releases. I consider myself a movie enjoyer, popcorn lover. Jonathan is a movie buff cinephile.
That I am.
Yes, you have to hold the microphone to your mouth if you want
I
people
do
to
need
hear
to
it.
Do that.
Beans is definitely attacking Jonathan's face right now. So, just an FYI, right now we're doing a Oscar series, so we are talking about all the movies that are nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars. So far, we have reviewed The Triangle of Sadness, Banshees of Inisherin, Avatar Way of Water, Tar, Everything Everywhere All at Once, All Quiet on the Western Front, and today, what movie are we reviewing, Jonathan?
The Fablemans, directed by Steven Spielberg.
We are doing The Fablemans. Also, just a quick announcement, there are lots of spoilers in our podcast. We like to talk through the whole movie, so if you don't want to be spoiled, go watch it yourself and then come back and we can discuss together. And also remember to follow us on Letterboxd, DI_podcast, where we post the movie we're going to review next. Just if anybody wants to comment, and my sister did leave a comment on this one, and she said that the movie was low-key cringe in a couple of parts. I think that Beans needs to go in her crate.
Beans is going to crate.
So Jonathan has walked away because we are putting Beans into her crate because she was getting a little too spicy. We'll have to do some playtime after the podcast for sure. And he is on his way back now. So Jonathan, now that you have returned, would you like to tell us a little bit about the movie we're talking about today? That sigh that you just gave.
Beanster, man. Yes, I can do that. Let me find the synopsis. Capture every moment. A coming-of-age story about a young man.
Does it actually say that?
That's what it says on Letterboxd.
Capture every moment, period.
They usually put like a motto just above the synopsis.
Oh, okay, I see. Okay, carry on.
A coming-of-age story about a young man's discovery of a shattering family secret and an exploration of the power of movies to help us see the truth about each other and ourselves. This is technically an autobiographical story about Steven Spielberg's upbringing and his childhood and his beginning of love for film. It's directed by Steven Spielberg, written by Tony Kushner, who is his usual go-to writer. He writes.
Oh, I just assumed Steven Spielberg had written it because it was about his life.
Well, it was written by both of them, excuse me.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Little iconic duo there.
For sure. Starring Paul Dano, Michelle Williams, Judd Hirsch, Seth Rogen, Gabriel LaBelle, and David Lynch in a very quick cameo.
Mm-hmm. Wait, who do they play?
So Paul Dano's the dad, Michelle Williams is the mother, Judd Hirsch is his uncle.
Yeah, but like their names, Jonathan. Like,
you
can't just say who the actors are and not who they are like playing.
His father's name was Bert Fableman, so I guess they just created the name Fableman as
yeah, and I mean it makes sense because it's like a fable in a sense. Like,
yeah,
it's kind
a story.
Of fake, even though it's like inspired by his childhood, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but yeah, his dad's Bert. His dad is kind of like a scientific engineer. He's
workaholic,
super like type A workaholic guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then his mom,
Mitzi Fableman,
played by
Michelle Williams, is very emotional and like creative kind of mind.
Mm-hmm. Very opposite of the dad for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Gabriel LaBelle, who plays Sammy Fableman, or
inspired by Steven. Yeah.
Judd Hirsch, who plays his uncle Boris, who's only in like 10 minutes of the movie and still got an Oscar nomination.
He did?
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
It's crazy.
Means it was really good acting, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Seth Rogen, who plays Benny Lowy, who is his father's best friend. And we'll get into the spoilers with that later.
Yeah, there's a lot of drama with Benny.
Lots of drama.
Uncle Benny.
That is the main cast, yeah. Do you want to intro and then Well, let's do a quick little bio of Steven Spielberg.
Since this is all about him, for sure.
This is per several different websites, but it's very primary source is Wikipedia.
we love Wikipedia.
Why don't people enjoy Wikipedia
more? Well, I think it was like with Wikipedia growing up, it was like, don't use it because like
anybody can put
the general public can edit it. But like, I remember I heard somewhere that like, if it's false, like Wikipedia will take it down pretty fast. So, but I'm just like, whose job is it to fact check Wikipedia? You know what I mean? Like somebody
whose job sitting description there, is that?
Like going through all the edits that people have made and like being like, nuh-uh, you got to get that out, you know? Fact checking. I would not want to be a fact checker for Wikipedia. Imagine being like, my job is to fact check. I guess that's like a lot of people though do that.
Yeah, I bet so.
I guess it's pretty common actually. But I don't know. If you think about it, there's more brains going into writing that Wikipedia page than like some random article that one person wrote. So maybe shouldn't it be like more reliable?
Yeah, more strictly.
I don't know. Now that I've graduated from college, I feel like we are allowed to use Wikipedia. We understand the risks that we are taking using Wikipedia. Yes, exactly. Yes.
But yeah, teachers hated Wikipedia. Anyways, Spielberg was born in Cincinnati, Ohio, and grew up in Phoenix, Arizona. And he moved to California when he was in high school. Was he a freshman or a sophomore? Do you remember?
He was a senior, I think.
Senior?
I don't know. They didn't really talk through that timeline too much.
That's true.
Like, of his age. And, like, they did an okay job aging him, but not enough that I was like, is he supposed to be 14 or 18? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think they did. It was an okay job.
Yeah, they did okay, I guess. Yeah. Okay, carry on.
And so his first, well, he's technically the most commercially successful director of all time. Yeah, he became a major figure in the new Hollywood era after his name became a household name with the first summer blockbuster ever, Jaws.
There was never a summer blockbuster before Jaws?
That was the first film considered to be a summer blockbuster.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. It like kind of created that whole genre, if you can call it that.
You know what's so weird to me? He's just scrolling through Wikipedia right now, and I was looking at it, and it has his signature on Wikipedia, which, like, isn't it weird to me that, like, or anybody else, it is weird to me, not isn't it weird to me, that, like, famous people give away their signature all the time. It's like you're asking people to forge documents, you know what I mean? Like, here you go, take it. Do That's what you weird. Will.
It doesn't really, yeah, I
guess
He's
got a pretty
works.
Cool signature. You look it up. It's not too bad.
Yeah. Of course, after that, he's created some of the most iconic movies of all time. Close Encounters of the Third Kind, E.T., the Indiana Jones trilogy.
Is he doing the new Indiana Jones movie?
No.
Oh.
He was going to,
cool.
But then he dropped out, I think, for James Mangold, who is a really good director, actually.
Hmm. Okay.
He did Ford versus Ferrari.
Oh, I love that movie.
Logan.
Oh, then he'll probably do pretty good.
He's done like Color Purple, Jurassic Park, Schindler's List, which was his first Academy Award win. Mm-hmm. Saving Private Ryan, the list goes on and on. War Horse, The Post, Bridge of Spies. And he co-founded Amblin Entertainment, which is like the little bicycle going to the moon from E.T.
Referencing E.T.
And DreamWorks.
He is a part of DreamWorks?
Why didn't I not know that?
So he is responsible for Shrek?
He is partly responsible for Shrek.
Wow, that's iconic.
Love that. Also known for his longtime collaboration with John Williams.
Oh, yeah. They are definitely a duo.
All but five of his movies.
Wow. Did John Williams do this one?
Yes. He came out of retirement to do this movie.
Oh, my gosh. See, I feel like, though, I didn't, like, really vibe with the music that much. Like, it wasn't very memorable music to me.
I enjoyed it at some points, and then other points, I did not.
Okay. Well.
Sometimes just really distracted from what was going on in the scene, I think.
Thank you for the little bio on Steven Spielberg. If you've never heard of him before, he's basically iconic for lots of movies. My sister, growing up, was a huge Steven Spielberg fan, so I knew a lot of his movies from that. So I think I know a little bit more about Steven Spielberg than the average Joe. Like, fun fact about me, my car that I drive is a hand-me-down from my sister. We're not really a hand-me-down. My parents intended for us to both share it. And my sister named it Alan when she got it, when she was probably like 15 or 16, because that's Steven Spielberg's middle name. So my car is literally named after Steven Spielberg. So I definitely heard a lot and knew a lot about him growing up, for sure. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Is it really cool, though? I don't, like, call my car Alan.
Nobody calls their car by their name.
I never really cared to call my car a name.
Like,
but
over
how
here.
Do they know you're talking to them?
That's a great point.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's our little bit of intro and fun fact about Steven Spielberg. So, do you want to give our reviews of the movie? How many stars would you give it out of 5?
3 stars out of 5.
I agree. I would give it a 3. I'm not going to lie. I was a little disappointed in it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Spielberg has gotten more fantastical over the years, if that makes sense, with his movies. And it just isn't as believable or enjoyable to me. Like, it's just a little, you know, some directors have their iconic style, but with him, this, like, style has gotten a little old, in my opinion.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Literally, like, I think in the past 10 years, Steven Spielberg only makes safe movies.
Yes, you're right. That's what it is. They're safe. And I feel like his older movies weren't like that. I mean, they were so diverse. Like, Color Purple to Schindler's List is such a 180 degree flip and completely different. You know what I mean?
To,
like,
to War of the Worlds.
I mean, Jaws, all that stuff is, like, all over the place. And, like, I think he has settled maybe into a niche that he enjoys, but I think it's hindered his movies and his growth at this point in his career. And I think, you know, maybe that's what he enjoys, and obviously he should make stuff that he enjoys, and it must still be doing good if it's getting nominated for Best Picture. But I feel like we're at a point where if Steven Spielberg drops a movie, there's a high chance it'll be nominated for Best Picture just because it's a Steven Spielberg movie.
Yes, yes.
But I don't know if it really deserved the nomination, in my opinion, for Best Picture this year.
I can see how some people really enjoy this movie.
I guess I can understand what would be enjoyable about it. Maybe there's a nostalgia factor to it, to people that are of the same generation as Steven Spielberg, you know, growing up watching his movies. Well, not growing up, I guess, but, you know, being of the same age as him and then also seeing his movies throughout their life. Maybe that's more nostalgic, but I just feel like it was okay. Like, comparing to, like, Tar or Everything Everywhere All at Once or Triangle of Sadness, like, the originality of those movies and the, like, execution of them, I think, in comparison to Fablemans, which, in my opinion, Fablemans is very much, you know, like you said, like, safe
it's
movie
safe,
for Spielberg
yeah.
that I just don't think it deserved the nomination as much as other films. And if it wins Best Picture, I would be disappointed. Now, I'm not saying it wasn't a good movie, but I think it's definitely a 3-star for me.
Yeah, me too.
For sure.
I agree. In comparison to other than movies, it's,
Yeah, like, throughout this movie, there were a lot of times where I was like, can you please just, like, end now? Like, are you kidding me? We still have 40 minutes left. I mean, it's 2.5 hour long movie. And I think some movies need that time span. And we were talking about this the other day, but I think the right amount of time for a movie is between an hour and 45 to 2 hours. And I think if it goes beyond that, you better have a really good reason to make it any longer, because then it starts to drag if it's not, like, fantastic, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if I'm in a movie and I think, ugh, I want it to end, that's a bad sign, I think, on the writing note.
Yes, me too.
For how long they made it. But yeah. Do you have any opinions about it before I jump into talking through the plot?
Yeah, it's just like, let's just save. I'm trying to think of the last Steven Spielberg movie that, like, I'm like, Lincoln was great.
Lincoln was fantastic. The music in Lincoln is one of my favorite movie scores, which I've talked to you about that, and we haven't sat down and listened to it together, but I love the music from Lincoln. I mean, it's amazing. That movie was probably, in my opinion, his last, like, good, you know, new, fresh thing from him.
Yeah. What else is he? I mean, he did Bridge of Spies, West Side Story.
Bridge of Spies was kind of disappointing. Oh, he did West Side Story? I never saw West Side Story.
The new one.
Yeah, the new one. I didn't see the new one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was...
But I'm not super into musicals. Like,
yeah,
I'm not
me either.
I'm not really into musicals. Unless it's like a Disney movie, then I love it.
Well, he did Ready Player One.
Ready Player One was really good.
War Horse, The Post. Haven't seen that.
The Post was okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Adventures of Tintin. I actually really enjoy that movie.
That one was okay. It was cute. It was a good story. I don't know. Let's jump into the plot, though.
Jump in.
Okay. So this movie starts out in January of in the 1950s. Yes. Of a family waiting in line to go see a movie. So there's a little boy who is Steven Spielberg, obviously, but he goes by Sammy. They call him Sam in the movie. And he is too scared to go into the movies because it's like dark and there's going to be giant people and he's scared and he doesn't want to go. And his dad goes into this big rant about the science of movies and how it works and how it's like just individual pictures strung together at a fast rate. So in your mind, you think that it's a moving picture. And his mom pulls him away and tells him he's going to leave with the biggest, sloppiest smile, which first off is just gross to me. A sloppy smile? That's kind of nasty. I don't know. I thought that was kind of a gross way to explain it. But I think it's the first time they introduce like this extreme parallels of his parents. His yes. mom being very, you know, like emotional and like love driven and passionate, and his dad being very like scientific.
Mm-hmm.
And how that differs. And they really kind of shoved it in your face a little bit. You know, they could have been a little more subtle about it, like showing the differences in the parents versus that was just like, bam, they're different. There you go. Just wanted you to know, you know, just like a quick introduction.
Just throwing it out there.
Yeah. But so in the movie, there's like there's a huge train crash, basically. And the kid is like, oh my God, this is amazing. And it reminded me so much of Super 8.
Yes, yeah,
which
a lot
is
of
it's a J.J. Abrams, but I know that I think Steven Spielberg like helped
produced it.
So like, I don't know why, but I was like, I wonder if that was like partially why he was super into the movie Super 8 or why he wanted to produce it because mm-hmm. of the train crash. But it really, really reminded me because I mean, in Super 8, it's like a car on the railroad.
Yeah, you're right.
And
yeah.
it gets hit by a train, which I thought was cool. I was like, oh, I wonder if that was like a little Easter egg
little
into
Easter
his
egg.
Childhood.
I forgot there was a car on,
yeah.
on that track.
Because in the movie, there's like a car on the train tracks that gets hit by the train and it like flies in the air and little Sammy thinks it's the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And so he asks for Christmas, or not Christmas, oh my God, excuse me. That's not what I meant to say. We celebrate Christmas, so that's why I said Christmas. But so like when they're driving home, they show you that it's December because there's all the Christmas lights on and they get to his house and they get to his house and there's no Christmas lights on it. And that's when the family kind of talks about how they're Jewish and they're like, well, what do you want for Christmas, Sammy? And Sammy's like,
Hanukkah.
Ah! They're like, what do you want for Hanukkah? See, I'm so sorry. I'm not trying to do this. I'm just used to always being like, what do you want for Christmas? Because we celebrate Christmas. But this family, they're asking what he wants for Hanukkah. And he's like, I want Christmas lights for Hanukkah. And then they're like, okay, whatever, Sammy.
Yeah.
And then later he's like, you know what? I want a train for Hanukkah because of the train crash that he saw in the movie. And he gets his train for Hanukkah. And the first thing that he wants to do is crash it into a car. And
I mean,
his dad's like,
not? I would want to do
so mad at him.
Thing.
I know, you would?
Yeah.
Did you do that as a kid growing up? You
probably.
Would crash things on purpose?
Yes.
I guess that's very... very boy thing to do,
boy.
I guess.
It's very fun. You wouldn't understand.
I never really wanted to destroy my toys growing up. I don't know. Maybe my mom would know. I don't remember wanting to destroy toys.
I always did. Every Lego set I ever built, I immediately destroyed. Created something new.
Oh, wow. You're such a creator. You're
I
like
am.
A god, basically.
Pretty much. Glad you agree.
Yeah, so basically his dad gets mad at him for like simulating a train crash and he says, you can't just love something, you also have to take care of it, which was a good line, I thought. Mm-hmm. That was a really good line. I was like, that is smart. Like, you can't just love something, you know, you gotta nurture it and grow it and maybe not destroy it.
Maybe
especially
not.
Expensive things.
I could have learned that when I was young too.
Yeah, you can't just love me, Jonathan. You have to take care of me.
What? That's a lot of work.
I am a lot of work, actually. So that night, his mom and his dad are like in bed and they're basically like exposing that she is like working on a score, a music score, because she's a pianist and she's following along. And it just feels so, this is when I started being like, this feels so fake. It just felt so fantastical. Like the way that she was talking and the dialogue reminded me a lot more of a play than it did a movie. It was like a little just like forced. Her dialogue here. And for me, like, a play is more of a storytelling experience. So it feels more like a story is being told at you. Whereas in movies, I feel like it's more, like, real. Like,
yeah.
it seems like you're really watching real people. And I think that's a good differentiation. And I think it's a different art form. But I think it didn't work in this movie. Like the way that they did the storytelling, it felt very much like a play, at least when his mom was talking. And maybe that was just his mom's character. Like, that was just how his mom acted.
I can agree with that. I think Michelle Williams is a fantastic actress. I don't think this is her best role, or
I don't think she did amazing. I don't know. Was his mom really like that?
Yeah, apparently. I mean, this is them side by side.
I mean, what, they have the same haircut. That doesn't mean that his mom is really...
True.
Jonathan, I'll put the picture on here of them side by side if you're watching the video.
But I think she was.
Michelle
Williams just kind of fell flat for me this movie.
I think she fell flat too.
But she's a great actress. She, like, is Blue a great Valentine, actress. She's heartbreaking in that movie.
So Jonathan has a website pulled up, kind of like fact checking the movie.
This is historyversushollywood.com. This is comparing Steven Spielberg's real life with the movie, and the movie is actually pretty accurate.
Really? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, when you have the person who lived it telling the story. You know what, though? Like, I think in my childhood, I'm like, I don't know what I would put in to a movie if I was talking about my childhood.
Childhood would be important enough to make a movie out of.
I know. I mean, I guess his was important, but I was literally sitting there like, how does he remember all this crap from his childhood?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I wouldn't remember all that.
Interesting. So it's pretty accurate?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, call accurate. It out whenever you hear something that's not true or mm-hmm. interesting, because I want to hear the differences and everything.
For sure.
So his mom basically then realizes that he wants to crash the train, I guess, to feel like control.
To be in control. That was his whole attitude for film, because he could control what would happen and how it would affect.
Oh, and
future,
like,
events
he can't control his life.
He can't control his life,
but he can control what happens.
Coping mechanism.
Oh, I didn't get that. Yeah, because I'm like, I don't know if I would support destructive behavior in my children, but also I don't have kids, so I don't know anything about what it's like to raise a kid. True. But I was like, I don't know how I feel about that. So basically his mom realizes this and she's like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to let you film the train crash on your dad's camera, and then you can watch it over and over and over again, and you don't have to keep crashing the train.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is what they did. And he ended up like filming like a bunch of different angles and crashing his train like a million times to get like all the best of shots.
Yes.
And stuff, which was really cute. Very cinematic for a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
5-year-old.
8 maybe. I don't know.
No, there's no way he was 8 years old. He was younger than that.
I would say
he's like 5 or 6. Yeah. But so basically Sammy's mom like is like developing the film and is like, it comes in one day, but she's like, you have to wait until after dinner to go watch your movie that you made of the train.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is like kind of when they introduce like that his mom is like a little more, I don't know what word to use, like she's different than other moms at the time is like kind of how they introduce her.
Yeah.
Because at the dinner table they eat off paper plates and plastic silverware, paper cups, and they eat on a plastic or a paper disposable tablecloth.
Yeah.
And at the end of dinner every night they ball it up and just throw it away, which is not very common for like a woman of the time. Like a
no.
woman at the time would have been expected to like have all of the fancy silver.
Yeah.
And all of the plates and all the dishes. And I'm like, I don't know if I believe it too much, because she was using like normal dishes to like serve the food, but then she didn't want to clean the plates.
It was because, well, they mentioned this like one time in the movie that she wanted to take care of her hands because,
oh yeah, because
she's
a pianist. Yeah, they had introduced it that she didn't want to have to clean dishes, I guess, because she's a pianist.
And that,
but
can,
then
yeah.
all of her like dishes that like she served the food in were like actual dishes, and she was using Pyrex, which you can't put in the dishwasher.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
You would know that.
So I was like, that's weird, but I don't know. And also, like, who cares? Jonathan is a big supporter of plastic plates, so you probably
yes.
would love it if I wanted to do that.
Plastic and paper.
I'm not a big fan of paper plates. I like to eat. I don't like my food to be all flimsy, and then the plate gets, like, soggy.
What kind of plates are you using?
I guess I don't buy the high-quality stuff.
You gotta go for the Dixie plates.
The Dixie
plates. Dixie or bust.
Yeah, I don't like eating off paper plates. But that was like kind of showed some tension between the mother-in-law and her, that like she didn't use real silverware and real plates and stuff.
Yeah, there was some tension there.
Yeah. But then eventually his mom lets Sammy be excused so we can go watch his movie. And then he just becomes like fixated on making movies and films. So like Sammy starts making like random movies like crazy. Like he forces one of his sister to like eat, put candy corn and ketchup in her mouth and then pretend like they're pulling her teeth out at the dentist to make a movie. And then he like takes all the toilet paper and puts it all over his sisters so that they look like mummies. It was like really cute. They were doing all these little things and they're making movies together.
I liked all the scenes of Sammy like learning how to make movies. I thought all those were very well done.
Yeah, I thought they were cute. They were definitely cute. And growing up, my sister... So my sister was a television major in college, but she was always, like, making little videos growing up. So, like, it was very reminiscent of my childhood, like, the random crap that we would do, making, like, little videos and stuff. Like, she would make all these little movies about her, like, sock monkey murdering people. like horror stories of her sock monkey. And that was so fun. And it's, like, it just reminded me a lot of my childhood because we did that a lot because she really liked making movies. And she... Like, I remember we would just, like, do the stupidest stuff and, like, make little movies out of it. Like, we would do a bunch of, like, music videos and we would do, like, fashion shows. But, like, they would be, like, weird fashion shows. So, like, one person would walk down looking, like, fabulous. And then another person, we would, like, do the weirdest stuff. And, like, they would look ridiculous. And
It reminded you of that.
Yeah, it reminded me of my childhood a lot. Because my sister did stuff like that growing up. And she always wanted to do something, like, artsy and filmy and stuff. Which was cool. And I don't know, we have a lot of fun videos of us as kids from her doing that. It definitely made childhood really fun.
Aww.
Yeah.
That's cute.
I was always jealous of her because she always had like something she was passionate about. Whereas I was just like good at math. So I became an engineer, you know? I always wanted to have something I was passionate about and I was always jealous of her for that. Because she was really good at it too. Mm-hmm. She's really good at it. So I don't know. Definitely reminded me of my childhood, which I enjoyed that aspect of it.
I like that.
That's Do you have good, any fun facts to throw in?
Oh, to throw in? Should have brought this up earlier. First movie that Steven Spielberg ever saw was The Greatest Show on Earth, as depicted in the movie.
Which is the one with the train crash that he was
6
with?
Years old.
I told you, he was like, there's no way he was like 8 years old.
And his first home movie was The Train Crash involving the Lionel Trains. Involved a crash with his Lionel Trains when he was 12 years old. He says, quote, "I was really traumatized by that movie with the train wreck," told the crowd during a TIFF Q&A. "I mean, actually, I recreated the train wreck just the way Sammy does on 8mm film because I had to look at that over and over again to get it out of my system." There you go.
Interesting. So he needed to get it out of his system. I thought he... Can you wiggle the mouse? I thought he just did it to like... Because he liked watching the train crash.
Yeah.
I didn't know he's like traumatized by it. It is scary though for like a 6-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Continue.
Well, so next, they tell you that a year has passed and his family has moved to Phoenix from Jersey. So that his dad can take a new higher up job at GE, General Electric. And they're going to have to leave Uncle Benny. And the mom is so upset about it. And she's like really sad and like fighting about it because she doesn't want to leave Uncle Benny behind. She considered him like family, I guess, at the time. At least that's what she thinks, that she considers Uncle Benny. And then all of a sudden, there's like a tornado outside. And the kids are like, "Mom, there's a tornado. And first off, I'm like, are there tornadoes in Jersey? Because they hadn't moved to Phoenix yet. They were just telling you that they were going to move to Phoenix. And I didn't think that there were tornadoes in Jersey.
I didn't even catch that they were in Jersey, actually.
I remember them saying they lived in Jersey.
Yeah, I believe, yeah.
But so there's a tornado outside. And his mom, I don't know why, but she was like, all of a sudden, is like, "Kids, get in the car. We're going to go find the tornado and follow it." So she legit like puts all her kids into their car and she starts driving towards the tornado. And the kids are like, "Is this safe?" And
she's
like,
out.
Yeah, the kids are freaking out. Like they're kind of scared. And she's like, "Of course it's safe. I'm your mother." And I'm like, I don't think that means that it's safe just because she decided that. And then the second that she says that, there's like a huge electrical surge from the power lines that like goes over their car. And it's like, she's like, "Oh my God, like, what did I just do? Like I could have killed my kids driving towards a tornado." She realized like what she was doing. And all of a sudden she starts saying everything happens for a reason and like over and over again, like it's a mantra. And I'm like, I'm not really sure what the reason is for this. and why it needed to happen, because you drove your kids into a tornado.
Yes.
But then the kids just keep iterating it. And I guess it's just an expose of his mom being a little, like, extremely passionate to the point where, like, it could endanger her own family and her life. And
unstable.
I feel like in the ads for this, they made his mom out to be almost, like, extremely, like, emotionally driven to the point where it was, like, crazy. But then, like, I didn't think it was, like, they did that once in the movie. And then other than that, she just seemed like a normal woman.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't catch that from the trailers.
I thought that they made her seem crazy in the trailers. I don't know.
Really?
Or just, like, very wild. Very free-spirited in the trailers.
That's
not
a good
crazy.
Way to put it, yeah.
Yeah. So did that really happen, the electrical surge thing?
I'm not sure about that. I bet it did. It's too specific not to have...
True.
Happened,
I think it did.
Like.
And it didn't, they didn't really need to put it in the movie. They just did. So
they
I think it probably
was very cinematic.
Us sitting here like, yeah, it probably happened. Like having no idea. But then they show a lot of like him making movies and stuff. And like of his family and the moving and just like him wanting to film everything. And then all of a sudden they're like moving into their Phoenix house, because like they're showing him film as they're driving to their new home, and the kid's like, stop the car, I need to get out of the car and film you pulling into the driveway.
Like, I need
like,
a pee.
I know, I'm like, in true vlogger fashion, like he was ahead of the time,
he was on it.
Because this is like very popular now, people like filming their lives and stuff like that, so that was really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I could just envision you just needing to pee.
Yes, I would have been the kid in the car like, I have to pee.
Get out.
I would have just gotten out of the car and gone inside. The amount of times I've done that.
Yes,
I have a very small bladder, especially growing up. I had to pee all the time.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, they moved to Arizona. So they relocated to Haddon Township, New Jersey, to Phoenix.
So I was right. They were from Jersey.
Yeah.
So that was true.
Most things happening in this movie are true.
Well, what literally. Things were fake then? I guess we'll get to it when we get to those, but do you know?
I don't know. Yeah, pretty much. I feel like everything that I can think of is true. Sure, I think parts of it were definitely exaggerated for film's purpose and sake.
But also when like you're Steven Spielberg, I don't think producers can come up to you and say, you need to make this more dramatic. You know what I mean? Like,
Steven Spielberg.
Like, if somebody was making a bio movie of my life, which first off, they never would do, I feel like they would be like, we're going to make this part crazy because it would be better, you know?
True.
And they would be able to say that to me because I'm like a nobody. But like for Steven Spielberg, like you can't be like, sorry, dude, your life is too boring. Like, I'm pretty sure he has a lot of say in how the movie was made.
Who'd you get to play yourself?
Oh, who would play me? Margot Robbie, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, for my Jersey accent and white trash nature. Who would play you?
Probably Idris Elba.
I thought you were going to say Ryan Gosling.
Oh, probably.
But I can see the resemblance to Idris Elba, you know, like your manly nature.
Very
commanding,
very, yes.
Attractive. I'm kidding. Yeah, so then they cut to Steven Spielberg being a teenager, and he's a Boy Scout, and they're out there catching baby scorpions. All I wrote here was, boys are gross.
Boys are gross. He was actually a Boy Scout. He rose to the highest rank, Eagle Scout. In order to get his photography merit badge in 1958, he made his nine-minute, eight-millimeter film, The Last Gunfight.
So they actually did. Yeah, because they showed him shooting a video with all his friends. Why do I keep doing that?
I don't know.
Whatever. So basically, he's hanging out with his Boy Scout friends, and they go to see the movie Who Shot Liberty Vance? And his friends are making fun of him about some girl, and he doesn't even care because he's just into the movie.
That would be me.
Yeah.
That's literally me when I go see movies with like friends back in high school.
Yeah. Your friends would be like talking and
stuff. Yeah, I'd be like, oh, guys, we came here for the movie.
You know, it's
what
so,
are you doing?
I know. It's so funny, though, because you and I are like old people now, and anytime there's like teenagers in movies, I don't understand why teenagers want to go to movies and they want to talk. Like, it's like, why did you come to the movie?
Why did you pay?
Like, why did
bucks?
You pay the money to be here if you're just going to sit and talk in the back? So we're the old people who get infuriated by it, but I guess that was you when you were a kid. I never did that growing up.
That kind of was me when I was a kid.
Ugh, it's awful. I'm so disappointed in you.
What else is
my
new?
Disappointment is immeasurable. My day is ruined. yeah, so like they're watching like Who Shot Liberty Vance, like a Western movie. And then his friends are like, what movie are you going to make? And then they cut to him shooting a Western with all of his buddies from his Eagle Scout group. And that's like what you were saying. Mm-hmm. The movie that he actually did shoot was that Western, I guess. And everybody was like amazed by it because the gunshots looked like actual like gunshots. They were like flashes. And his dad was like, how did you do that? And he was like, oh, I just poked holes in the film so genius. That the white light would just shine through and it would look like a gunshot. And it was so smart.
I know. That's genius.
Yeah, it was super smart. And everybody was like amazed by it. And he was using all these cool little tricks where like he would set up like a rig to make dust fly in the air when someone ran over it. And they pretended there was like bombs going off and stuff. It was super cool. It was really fun to watch like the little film tricks he came mm-hmm. up with on his own to like make it look more believable. And so he played the whole thing for the Boy Scout troops. And these kids, first off, for their Western film, somehow had a very professional set to shoot it on. Like, it looked real.
It looked really good.
It was really cool. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, continue.
Yeah, so basically then they cut to Sammy going on a camping trip with his family, and he wants to buy like a bunch of expensive film equipment to like keep making movies. And this is kind of when you see that clash of his dad being like, you need to focus on school and doing something like real with your life and not making movies. Yeah. He says that movies aren't making something real and that they're just imaginary and no one would ever be able to use them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He really
I mean, you can't really use a
up.
Movie. Yeah, I guess he did. That's a real I told you so moment that he's reached now. But yeah, so the whole family's going on a camping trip and you start to see the tension of like Sammy like taking a very seriously film and his dad starting to kind of be like, I don't know if I really support this to an extreme level to where you would be spending a lot of money on it instead of studying your algebra.
Algebra. I hate algebra too.
I liked algebra.
Well,
but I'm
you
good at
were
math,
probably
as I
weird
have said.
Kid.
Huh?
You're probably a weird kid.
I was not any weirder than any other kid. All kids are a little weird, in my opinion.
I was weird.
The kids aren't weird. They're just themselves, like, without feeling judgment, which would be nice.
That would be nice. That
would be nice, yeah.
Go back to those days.
Mm-hmm. So the whole family goes on this camping trip. And first off, there is, like, a scene when, like, his mom is, like, swinging on a tree. And at the same time, his dad is like trying to teach the kids how to build a fire and the kids are like, boring dad, I'm gonna go watch mom literally try to destroy a tree. And I'm like, excuse me, why are you doing this? This is terrible. Like, I was like, this isn't even cute or funny. Like, you're literally like swinging on a tree. Like, you're gonna kill the tree. Like, I don't understand. And it was funny because it reminded me of this one time Jonathan and I were at a local park and there was like a big pond and we looked across the pond and there was this woman, I don't know what had gotten into her. She was with a man, and the man, she was probably 25 years old, I would say. She was with a man, and the man was just fishing, you know, minding his own beeswax. And she's over there, and this was like a baby tree, like a really thin tree, probably like an inch wide, and it was probably like 6 feet tall, like very thin baby tree. She's sitting over there flailing it around, trying to pull it out of the ground. She's stomping on it. She's whipping it back and forth. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, why are you trying to kill this baby tree?
Thing.
Like, why don't you just go pick up a branch on the ground that fell off a big tree? It's the same size and it's already on the ground, like not being used. I was like so annoyed. And this reminded me of that moment of like, why would you do this?
That's true.
Yeah. So don't harass trees. That's basically what I'm saying right
trees.
Now. Yeah, don't hurt trees. They never hurt you. They're actually giving you oxygen, so you should probably go up and thank them.
Hug them,
but not too much.
Not too much,
it would be awkward.
I think there's a name for
it
that.
It might make them uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think there's a name for that.
A name for it? Tree hugger?
Yeah. It's a bad joke.
Yeah. So. but then you can see the dad is kind of like a little upset that the kids are more interested in the mom, you know, defiling the tree
defiling
than
a tree.
Him making a fire.
I love
and you can tell
trees.
That he isn't happy. You can tell like there's something off with him.
Yeah.
And so then that night his mom is drinking some alcohols and Uncle Benny and his dad are Jay chilling, you know, bro talk as bros do when they're camping, you know, being manly and bro-y.
Yeah.
And his mom comes out, I'm assuming drunk, and says some weird things, and then she starts dancing. And Benny's like, you need to film her. And so he goes and turns on the car headlights so that Sammy can like film her and it would be in a bright enough light that he could get it on the camera. So they're all just sitting there watching her dance. And one of the kids is like freaking out, like, don't dance, mom. Like everybody can see through your dress from the lights in the car, and nobody cared at all. And for some reason the kid was really upset, and you could see that's the one kid who like the one person in the family who noticed like she's acting like this because there's something that's like not okay, you know? Like
she
there's something not okay. And like the rest of the family was just like enjoying watching her dance, you know? But the other kid was like, you can tell she, I don't know. Like that one kid really saw her mom for who she was. But nobody else noticed it.
I don't remember the sisters' names.
Gosh, I don't remember the sisters' names at all. But it's fine. They were irrelevant. He had two sisters, basically. That's all you need to know.
He had three sisters.
Oh yeah, he had three sisters. Sorry. See? Irrelevant. but then yeah, so they then after this weird dance scene in the woods, they cut to the hospital and Mitch's mom dies and she's really upset about it. Obviously, as one should be. When their mother dies,
Mitzi's. Gotcha.
Mitch. She goes by Mitzi, but her name's Mitch.
Her name was Mitch. Her real name is
Sammy's mom's name is Mitch.
Leia, actually.
In real life?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Well, his mom's name was Mitch in the movie, and her mom died. And so his dad buys him like an expensive movie editor that he's been asking
for a long time.
He gives it to him in exchange for asking him to edit the video of his mom being happy at the camping trip so that she can watch a video of her being happy instead of being sad. And maybe it'll make her feel better after her mom has just died. And of course he asks him like, I need you to do it tomorrow. And Sammy is upset because he has 40 people coming in to shoot his next movie, a war film, on that same day that his dad is like, you need to edit this video for your mom. And so he gets in a little bit of a fight about it. And it's kind of like this, the first pull that you see in his family of like him choosing movies over his family. And this kind of becomes like an internal struggle for him throughout the film. But I don't know. I don't think it was dramatic enough to be like the big, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, I think it wasn't as dramatic as they were trying to make it seem. Like him having to choose art between his family.
I kind of get that. But he's still, he did film it that weekend, right?
He did end up filming the movie, but he didn't do it that day. Like, he ended up filming that video for his mom instead. Or editing the video for his mom, yeah. But so, that night, his mom gets a call from her mom saying, someone is coming. Don't let them in the house. Even though her mom is dead. So, it's like, there's no way your mom could call me? And it was, like, kind of creepy.
Yeah, she's having, like, a bad dream. That was a weird scene.
Yeah, I didn't really understand the significance of it. But basically, what ended up happening was Uncle Boris showed up. So, Uncle Boris was her mom's brother. And her mom was always scared of her brother growing up, and so she was like, that must have been what my mom was talking about, like, he's evil, don't let him in the house. But of course, long story short, they let him in the house. And so you find out that Uncle Boris worked in the movies and he was a circus performer too. And that kind of like really intrigues Sammy, and Sammy's like really interested in it and like wants to know everything about his career and what he's been doing and like how he got into the film business and everything. And he ends up that night sitting with Uncle Boris in his room, because I guess they're sharing a bedroom, while Uncle Boris is staying. And he starts telling Boris about his war movie and how he's so excited about it. And then he ends up talking about how he can't film it because his dad is making him edit this video of his mom, and he calls it a stupid camping trip video or whatever. And Boris explains to him like how family and art can't be one, and it's going to tear him apart and make him really sad. And this is when Sammy realizes like he's the Uncle Boris of his family, you know, like he's the mean brother.
He's the black sheep.
He's the black sheep. He's more into art than he is like family. And he, Boris is basically saying like that he left his family for his art, the circus. And he's telling Sammy that, Sammy, you love art more than your family, and this is going to tear you apart and make you really lonely and sad. Mm-hmm. And it really scares Sammy, I think, and it kind of freaks him out, and it makes him a little more motivated to make that movie for his mom.
For sure. So he only met his uncle twice in real life, but he actually did work for the circus. He was a lion tamer and had a crazy career. He left it largely in the actor Judd Hirsch's hands to decide how he wanted to portray Uncle Boris.
Well, obviously he did a good job portraying Uncle Boris because he got an Oscar nomination for it.
Yeah, drew that for very little time.
Yeah, for like literally no screen time.
Mm-hmm. Boris tells Sammy about the push and pull between art and family, trying to balance one's passion with one's obligation. And it's a theme that is prominent in Spielberg's early movies, including Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
So it must have been something he struggled with a lot, so he wanted to put it in his movies, I guess.
Yeah,
I think. Something relatable. I wouldn't consider family an obligation, though. That's really terrible. Family is not an obligation. You do things for your family because you love your family, not because you're obligated to.
I guess it's a weird word to use there.
Yeah. I guess that's how he felt about it then, I guess, in that moment. Like, family was an obligation. But.
Well, I guess, spoiler alert, for Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Actually, I've never seen that movie.
It's a great movie.
Well,
that's the one where like they play the piano like doom doom
yeah.
doom doom doom.
Beautiful rendition.
Thank you.
Spielberg reportedly later said that if he could do that movie over, he would have Richard Dreyfuss's character stay with his family at the end instead of leaving with the aliens.
Oh. So he even like realizes his mistakes growing up and realizes that even when he was making that movie, he didn't make the right decision for that actor.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. So next they show his mom like playing the piano, and you can hear her playing the piano while he's having this conversation with his Uncle Boris. And that's kind of like portraying like her push and pull from art and how she chose her family over art. And how it made her really sad, and she ended up not having a good career because of it. But I don't think that's a bad thing.
Did she put her career on hold for
her family. But one thing that first off irked me was like his mom was always playing the piano, right? Always. And she always sounded amazing. Like she was just playing through her pieces. And what bothered me about that is not what practicing is. Like when you're practicing your instrument, you focus on certain sections, you play through them a bunch, you study certain aspects to like improve the different parts of the piece. You don't just play through the piece. Like that is not practicing. That is bad practice of practicing. And it really irked me the whole time. Sense. She wasn't really practicing. She was just playing through the music. She and it really playing. Bothered me. Yeah. So then they cut to Sammy now editing the video of his family's camping trip. And he's having a really nice time watching the family have a nice time, and it makes him happy. And I think he's like, oh, it reminds him like to, you know, focus on his family. But then he finds out some nasty, nasty, sad things when he sees his mom being all lovey with Uncle Benny, who is not his father. And he's taken aback. You know, obviously no kid wants to find out that their mom is having an affair with their dad's best friend. Like that is pretty bad juju. And that is probably why his mom was so upset with leaving Benny behind when they moved to Phoenix.
She wasn't the same after that.
And I think like you could tell that his dad could feel that distance between him and his wife, and that's probably why he was unhappy, was because she was distancing herself from him and they weren't being truthful in their marriage. And I think the dad could feel that tension in their relationship, and that's why his dad seemed so upset all the time.
And yeah, that's all true. His mother fell in love with his father's best friend and realizes that on the camping trip. Steven also blamed his father because for years he falsely believed that his father had left his mother when it was actually the other way around. His father just didn't want his kids to know that truth and blame her instead of him.
Oh, he's like being sweet and loving to her even when she's leaving him for his best friend. Oh, his dad sounds like a very genuine person.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really sad. But that's just relationships, you know? Sometimes they don't work out in the perfect way. And sometimes parents don't. Just because they're parents together doesn't mean that they would be happier staying together than apart, you know?
True.
With people who end up getting divorced. So he shows those clips to his family, and you can tell that he edited out those dramatic parts, but so that obviously it wouldn't be a sad video. And his mom is like overjoyed by watching it. And I'm like, I would not, if I was sad and not feeling happy, I would not want you to show me footage of myself. Like, I don't think seeing myself would make me happy. Like,
well, we were,
I guess,
both
it reminded me of a happy time.
Very self-deprecating. So.
Yeah, but I was just like, I would not. That would not make me happy to see videos of me dancing around. Like, I wouldn't want to see videos of myself.
Me either.
If I was really sad. And then his mom afterwards is so overjoyed, and she goes up to him and she's like, "You really see me?" And he's like, "Oh." Taken aback, because he's like, mm-hmm. I do, and I see you for more than you think, you know, like you're cheating on my father. Mm-hmm. And then they jumped to him filming his war movie with all his friends, which was super fun to see all the little tricks and things that he was doing to make it like really dramatic and more cinematic and realistic.
I love that whole scene, honestly.
Yeah, it was a really, really fun scene. That was the best part of the movie. Like, they had little like water balloons full with flaked blood, and yeah. like the guys would like hit their chest and it would explode, like as if they were holding their wound. Mm-hmm. And it was just really cute. They did a bunch of little like fun things that like made it seem all realistic. Then they show a scene where Sammy is like hyping up one of his friends who is playing like the main general, war general, and telling him like how he needs to feel and how he needs to act, sad that like all of his men have died because he ordered them to go into war. And his friend is like very emotional and like gets really into it. And he's like, "Lock and load, man, lock and load. Like, let's go. I'm ready." And of course, the whole audience is crying when they watch it. And it's just like really emotional, but it was like showing him like already like directing movies and directing actors to act a different way and being able to evoke emotion in people from even a very young age, which, you know, if you think about it, is like, oh, that's so cool. But then you remind yourself like, wait, Steven Spielberg wrote this about himself. Like, oh yeah, I was evoking emotion out of people when I was 16 years old, baby. Like, it's kind of a little pretentious if you think about but we're very self-deprecating, as you said. So like, we wouldn't really go out there and be like, I am amazing.
This is what we created. This is what we did.
This is, we are fantastic. We are amazing directors. But I don't know. But it was cute though, like seeing that. It's hard to like associate with the character development when you know that this man wrote this about himself.
Yeah, he called it like semi autobiographical because he thought if he just blatantly said that it was.
Well, they changed the names and everything.
Well, yeah, true. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the whole 40-minute war movie with his friends, titled "Escape to Nowhere." All true story, won first prize in a statewide competition. This website also explains that it's hard not to recognize the influence that Escape to Nowhere might have had on Saving Private Ryan and the Normandy Beach sequence.
Oh, that's cool, yeah. The Normandy Beach sequence is very good.
Yeah.
So he had lots of experience filming war movies.
He had the entire cast of Saving Private Ryan watch Escape to Nowhere. He wanted to show them this old movie I made when I was like 16. And I think to an actor, they felt, what are we doing in Ireland with this guy? Is it going to look? It can't look like that. Why is he showing this to us?
Yeah, I would think it's really weird if he showed that to me.
Yeah, that's interesting though.
Yeah, that is interesting. I guess he just wanted to share like his experience with doing it from a young age. I don't know. Huh. Well, basically at the end of the movie, like of him showing the movie to his family and all of his Boy Scout friends, his mom instantly like crying, looks over to Benny instead of looking at her husband. And he notices it and he's like, ah, I know why you're doing that. Like, and he wouldn't have thought twice about it before, you know, looking over at Benny, but it's really awkward and uncomfortable because, you know, it's because his mom's cheating on him. And then there ends up being this huge confrontation with his mom of it being a couple weeks later, and he's being rude to her all the time, and she confronts him about it, and she like hits him in the back and like freaks out like, oh my gosh, I just slapped you.
Five-starred him.
Is that what it's called? When you
five-star, you slap somebody on the back
and you see
really
the
hard.
Handprint.
I used to do that all the time across
That's
country.
Funny.
It hurts so bad.
Yeah, I never did that to people or had it done to me, and don't
well,
do it to me.
You're also
I don't
want
to know what it's like.
So
I'm what?
You're female. It's different.
What?
Female friends don't do that. Guy friends do that.
Yeah, I never really like slapped my friends on purpose. So, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I probably didn't need to know that you guys are beating each other up for fun.
That's what guys do.
Boys are gross.
Bruvs.
Reiterating my statement from earlier. So in this little fit of rage that they're having, he shows her the video that he has of his mom, Lampy, and lovey-dovey with Uncle Benny. And all of a sudden, like, he gets really upset and he's like, sees his mom upset and he's like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to like upset you. Like, he's feeling all this anger towards his mom, and then when he finds out like that she's not like evil, like she feels bad about it too. He's like, oh, I didn't mean to like make you upset, and I won't tell anybody that it happened. So then he ends up going to the film store, and he sells his camera to the camera shop because he wants to quit making movies. And he knows that his family is moving to California and like all this jazzy jazz. It's really sad. And he doesn't want to leave, and his mom doesn't want to leave Benny. And he wants to quit filmmaking because of all this sad stuff that happened with his family, and finding out all this drama with his mom. And he runs into Uncle Benny there. And as he is selling his camera to the camera shop, Uncle Benny is buying him like a really expensive, nice camera, to give to him as a gift, like a goodbye gift. And Sammy, of course, is like, dude, I don't want this. Like, I don't want anything from you. And Sammy only agrees to take the camera if his uncle will take like $35 for it, which is a lot less than what the camera would have been worth at the time. Yeah. And then, of course, his uncle Benny like sneaks the money back into his pocket so that he gave him the camera as a gift, didn't pay him for it. And so Sammy takes it with him, and his family moved to California because his dad got an even better, bigger job.
Quick insert. He did almost abandon filmmaking and researching after seeing Lawrence of Arabia when he was 16. He was so impressed by the film that he began to have doubts as to whether he could ever make a movie that good, especially from a directorial standpoint. There is an HBO documentary called Spielberg, and this is where a lot of that goes in depth into like his childhood and the things we're talking about. But yeah, when the film was over, I wanted to not be a director anymore because the bar was too high. I had such a profound reaction to the filmmaking, and I went back and saw the film a week later, and a week later saw the movie again, and then a week later again.
Four times.
I realized there was no going back. This was going to be what I was going to do, or I was going to die trying.
So in the movie, they made it out like it was his mom's affair that was the reason he quit, but it was really because he was scared with how good movies were getting at the time that he wouldn't be able to make movies that good. I mean, imagine today trying to get into the movie business. It's just even crazier, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean,
it's even more competition. Wow.
It's insanely hard.
Yeah, it's weird thinking people had doubts back then, but at the time, like, that was the best of the best that had been out there. And like today, this is the best of the best, and it's only going to get better. So you better jump in, dive right in right now. Go for it, baby. So that's interesting. I didn't know. Lawrence of Arabia too, which is like a classic, but I wouldn't say it's like,
it's brilliant.
It's very, very iconic for sure. It's a good movie.
It's also 3 hours long.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to watch.
The Lord of the Rings is also 3 hours long, so what am I talking about?
I don't
think
you can compare those movies.
I feel like you can.
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, the kids have moved to California, and they're starting at a new school, and everybody's really tall for some reason. I guess Californians are extra tall compared to the general population of America.
He was also pretty short, too, I think.
Yeah, Spielberg's not very tall. But Sammy, they start... I said short. So they start by showing him like at gym playing volleyball, and he is like not very good at it basically. And Sammy is not very athletic. So he doesn't do very good, and he ends up getting made fun of a lot for because he's Jewish and because he accidentally hit one of the popular kids with the volleyball on the court, which is a no-go. I mean, if you ever hit one of the popular kids with a volleyball, like, you will, you know, you're just ruined for the rest of your high school career.
I don't know what that's like. I was always very good at volleyball.
People thought I was good at volleyball because I was tall. And I was never bad at it, but I never, like, was good at it.
I was great at serving.
I always felt... Cool. You have been served.
You just got jammed.
You just got jammed. Yeah, so Sammy ends up coming home that day, and his mom has bought a monkey. And she hasn't finished the cage for it, and she named the monkey Benny, which is weird, like after
which
her
is
lover.
Weird. That is a true story.
Oh, that's awful. That's so awful.
I don't know about the name actually.
And oh, really? But getting a monkey.
But
getting
the monkey, I was also real.
Well, she's really, really depressed, and the whole family can tell. And you know, you're assuming it's because she's missing Uncle Benny, her lover. And she said she gets mad at her husband, and she's like, "Benny wasn't your friend, but you knew he was mine." Like it's his fault that they didn't take Benny with them. And I'm like, that is weird. Like, why would you want to bring your mistress with you? And I got a little mad at this because I was like, first off, mistress. He's not a mistress. What's the male version of a mistress? Like a mistress?
A tool? I don't know.
A tool? I don't know, but it made me a little mad. I was like, there should be a name for a male mistress because like that is so slut-shaming that there's a name for a female mistress but not for a male.
I'm sure there is. I just can't think of it.
I don't know. It kind of bothered me. Like mistress has such a bad connotation, you know? As being the woman who sleeps with someone else's husband, but then there's no bad connotation for being a man who sleeps with someone else's wife.
I guess that's just how it is. Do you know what I mean?
Like the woman in that sense gets slut shamed, you know, not the man. It's annoying. We're gonna call him a monstrous. Short for monster. No, I don't know why. Monstrous just sounded like the first thing I could think of. But so she's upset that they left his monstrous behind. But I'm like, it's really weird. Like, why would you want to bring your monstrous with you, like along with your family? Like, that's just weird. Like, you're mad at your husband for not wanting to bring him with you. Like, you don't move with your monstrous.
Yeah, you leave him behind.
You break ties. Burn the bridge. Leave that monstrous behind.
Burn them. Don't actually burn them.
Don't act. Thank you for saying that. We cannot be held liable for anybody that you burn after this podcast. Specifically monstrouses. Mistresses, do whatever the fuck you want with those sluts. Ooh, that was a little vulgar. Okay, moving on. This next bullet point, I wrote drama in all caps. So Sammy goes back to school and he catches the popular guy smooching with someone who isn't his girlfriend.
Wow.
And so after that, he runs away and he's like, whoop, didn't see it. And then he runs into Logan, the popular boy, and Logan's friend, who's like this really weird guy. And they start like basically bullying him and they like force him to apologize to Logan's girlfriend. And they're like, Sammy, you have to apologize to his girlfriend for killing Christ. Just because Sammy's Jewish. And Sammy's like, that's right. Fucking stupid. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
And so they keep making fun of him. And so in an effort to stand up for himself, Sammy's like, you know what, though, you should ask your boyfriend to apologize to you for kissing another girl in the hallway. And then they're like, whoa. It was like a total like, oh, shit. Which that was probably the most interesting part of the movie was like that 1 5-minute clip. And other than that, I was really bored. So like that's how he stands up for himself. And then he realizes like a second after, like, whew, should not have done that. This is going to cause some drama mom. So he ends up getting in trouble and the guy punches him and he goes home with like a black eye, and then he comes home to his family and there's like all this drama about
it. Bloody nose.
Yeah, he's got a bloody nose and a black eye. But then so Sammy goes back to school and he like tells Logan's girlfriend like, hey, I lied, like, because he has to or Logan's gonna beat him up. And the girl's like, well, then how did you know the girl he was smooching's hair color, you know? And he was like, you're right. I didn't lie. I'm lying about lying. And then this girl's friend is like into Sammy. So like she asks Sammy to come over to her house and pray. And then this is the beginning of Sammy's relationship with this girl who is turned on by Jesus and obsessed with Jesus.
Monica Sherwood.
And I think that she likes him because he is a young Jewish man and she thinks that Jesus is attractive, and Jesus was a young Jewish man before he, you know, all the Christianity stuff happened, you know, the gist. There's a book on it if you want to read it. All of what happened to him.
Nice.
Yeah, so she is basically into him because he reminds her of Jesus, and he goes over to her house to pray. And she basically prays for the Holy Spirit to enter into his body. And Sammy's like, this is really weird. Like, I don't understand. She's like screaming for the Holy Spirit to enter Sammy. And then she starts kissing Sammy and like making out with him. And then after that, he's like, I accept whatever.
That was funny.
Because he likes the girl. And she's like, let's meet behind the bleachers tomorrow and pray more. And I'm like, is that what you think praying is? Like making out with somebody who reminds you of Jesus? It was really weird. I don't know. Was that girl real? Like, did he really date like a very strong Christian woman?
There's a part in this. She appears to have been inspired by a real person, though Spielberg has rarely spoken about his high school girlfriends, and her true identity is unknown.
Mystery woman. So they just like did that for fun, basically. It's made the girl like,
yeah,
into, like, maybe a really into Jesus girl. Okay. Well, yeah. So Sammy ends up getting to borrow his rich religious girl's camera in order to film senior ditch day, And what I thought was interesting is he goes to Senior Ditch Day, which like is a beach day where all the seniors go and they have a good time instead of going to school. And so he's filming it. And as he's filming it, they're playing music in the background. And the music had circus, like do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, mm-hmm. like hints in it. And I think that was kind of like a little way to say like he has entered his circus, like his art has finally trapped him back, like he is in his circus, like Boris's circus, his uncle.
That's a good note.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting because it was the first time he went back to filmmaking after mm-hmm. moving to California, and it's like he's trapped again, like he can't get out of it. So I thought that was like a good little side note that they did,
little tidbit.
Yeah, a little like teed beat. Yeah, so then they end up moving into their new rental house. Oh, they move out of their rental house into their permanent home. And the mom doesn't look very happy when they're moving in. And
first
then
off,
it cuts.
It was a really nice home.
It was a beautiful house for California. It was a really nice house. But yeah. Maybe it was cheaper back then. I don't know. I don't know what it was like then. But
it's all relative.
Yeah. So then they end up cutting to his parents telling them that they're getting a divorce and that they're splitting up. And all that Sammy can think about at that moment is like making a video of it, which is really sad. Like you can see he's kind of cares more about his filmmaking, or maybe that was just his coping mechanism at the time. It was like to think about movies instead. Yeah, because he could control his film, so like that's when he kind of threw himself into making that, editing that video of Ditch Day mm-hmm. instead of caring about it. And his sister comes in and confronts him about it, like, what the heck are you doing? Like, you're so like, you're such a bad brother, like all you can think about right now is like editing this stupid video instead of the fact that like our family is falling apart, you know. And then she compares him to his mom and says, you're the most like our mom of any of us. Yeah. Like, you're obsessed with your art more than your family. And then something that I noticed at this part that I wanted to complain about was that he was wearing like fake eye color contacts the whole movie. And I freaking hate it when they wear that. Like, I would rather him just have his natural eye color than wear like fake eye contacts. Because
I never noticed that. Really.
Oh, it's so obvious because his pupils are never accurately dilated for whatever light he's in. Like, they're always dilated the same, and it was driving me crazy the
continuity.
Whole time. Like, it made it seem fake and acting and stuff. Like, they obviously changed the story some to be a movie, and it was like a Fableman. So why couldn't he have a different eye color than Steven Spielberg? Like, it just annoyed me. It was unnecessary. Yeah, so that was like a little bit irked me. but then he goes to prom with his religious girlfriend, and he gets her a cross as like a gift for prom. And she's like, have you accepted Jesus? And then what was it that he said that was so funny?
I don't remember what it was. It was like,
I found him in the jewelry store or something. Like, it was like that. Like he was like, I'm not becoming a Christian. Which is good. He shouldn't change his religious views for a girl. And then Sammy tells her that he loves her and he wants her to move to LA with him. And he's like, she's like, excuse me, sir, I have college in front of me. I'm not leaving my life to go follow you. And
good
then
for her,
yeah, also good for her on that, like mad respect. And he's like all upset, and then he blurts out like, my parents are getting divorced. And then she's like, so you're just saying this to me because your parents are getting divorced? Like, you're just like like throwing yourself into this relationship just because you're like upset about your parents' relationship. And she's like, yeah, no, I'm not going with you. And then when all of this drama goes down between their relationship and them basically breaking up, they announce that it's time to show the Ditch Day movie. And he's like, oh, right now, like, I'm kind of going through something, man. So
they, some respect.
I know. Like, and so for some reason, he's like playing the video and he's making the popular guy Logan, like who bullied him all the time, he made him look really good in the video, like mm-hmm. a hero. And Logan got really mad about it, and he came to him after and he was like, why did you make me look so good? And Sammy was like, I just showed what the camera showed, and that's what it was like. And Logan was like, are you trying to make me feel bad for being mean to you? And he's like, you should feel bad for being mean to me. And so that's like a whole confrontation. Him and Logan kind of have like a nice moment where they kind of see each other and outside of like they're being bullies and stuff, and Logan's all mad about it. And then Sammy's like, well, dude, you still came out the winner, you got the girl, you know, you got your girlfriend back because of the video I made. And he's like, I guess I did, so but yeah. And then Sammy, like, at one point Logan's like threatening him to tell nobody that Logan got sad and cried a little bit about the movie that Sammy made and making him look so good, because Sammy was like, I'm never going to be able to compare to the person that you put in this movie. Like, this is not me. And now there's going to be these expectations that I'm like a superhero, basically, when I'm not. And he gets really emotional, cries about it, and he threatens Sammy to, like, don't tell anybody that I cried. And Sammy's like, I won't unless I make a movie about it, which I'm never going to do, which is kind of funny because he did.
Yeah.
Did that really happen? Do you know?
I don't know.
Oh, they didn't say all nine. Well, it'd be interesting. But it was a good little note because it's like, oh, they did make a movie about it.
I would like to think that that happened. I feel like everything else that has been true, that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they wouldn't just throw that in there for...
Yeah, I guess. Well... Yeah, whatever.
For shits and giggles.
You know? It would be kind of cool, but well, I am shitting and I am giggling, so it must have worked. Moving on. So the next day, he comes home and tells his mom about everything that happened, and it kind of like fades out, and I'm like, cool, end of the movie, great. Nope, psych, it's not over. There's more. There's still like 20 minutes of the movie. I was so annoyed. So they cut to a year later after he's graduated college and he's living in an apartment with his dad. Or he doesn't graduate college, graduated high school, living in an apartment with his dad, and he's having a panic attack for the first time because he wants to quit college and start his new life. And he's been sending out letters to a bunch of different film companies to try to get jobs or like work in the film biz. And nobody's been responding. And he's feeling really down. And his dad's like, just open this mail and I'll make you a cup of tea. Like maybe a letter came for you. And so one of the letters was from his mom and it was pictures of her being happy at a block party, whatever, boring. And then there's another letter that he got from CBS about some guy who responded to one of the letters he sent out. And the guy seemed like he kind of just wanted to bring Sammy in and kind of mentor him and like give him a little bit of expose as to like what the movie business is like. And then he's like, do you want me to introduce you to the greatest director of all time? And like, Sammy's on a high. Like, he is in Hollywood doing Hollywood things in a Hollywood studio office. Like, he's, whoever this person is, I don't care. I want to meet them. And then he sits down in the office and he looks around and he sees all these movie posters and he's like, oh my God, this is John Ford's office. Yeah. Like, the man, the greatest home director of all time. So he gets to go into John Ford's office. And John Ford is like harassing him, basically being like really mean and telling him to like, what do you know about art?
Look at the horizon.
Yeah. So he like he made him look at some paintings and one painting had a really high horizon and one painting had a really low. And he was like, this is what you need to know about art. If the horizon is high, it's interesting. If the horizon is low, it's interesting. But if it's in the middle, it's boring. And that was basically the end of the movie of him being like, oh, my God, I just got harassed by this man. And it was amazing, I guess.
Yes.
He had a great time. But
that is exactly how it happened.
He really met John Ford and everything.
Nothing more, nothing less.
That's exactly cool. What he said, apparently. So
I want to go back and
who
watch.
Who was the director? You said there was a famous director who was playing John Ford.
Oh, yeah, so that was David Lynch.
I don't know who that is.
He did Mulholland Drive, Blue Velvet.
Oh, wow.
Inland Empire.
So he's a
Twin
big guy.
Peaks. Yeah.
The restaurant?
No. Oh, that was the best part of the movie. It was David Lynch.
I just laughed. Yeah, when I saw him. But I'm not gonna. And then the movie just ended after that. I was like, why did you choose to end it now? Like, I guess he finally made it at the movie business or something. I don't know.
Guess so.
I just like thought it was so like mediocre. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I was just not. It just kind of ended, and instead of being like, wow, I was like, oh, thank God it ended. Like when the whale ended, I was like, oh, I need a moment to process. Like, I need to sit and think and simmer and like return to my body and soul. And this movie was just like, oh, thankfully it's over. So I hope it doesn't win Best Picture, but I wouldn't be surprised if it does because it's Spielberg. But yeah.
I want to go back and watch more Spielberg movies and go, where's the horizon in this frame? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I want to like notice it. Yeah. True. Like John Ford said. Well, that's a little tidbit of advice for everybody in this world. Where's the horizon? It matters. Mm-hmm. Well, sorry we got a little vulgar in this episode. I guess we need to switch this to being an explicit podcast because we cuss a lot, honestly.
That's true.
I'm sorry to anybody who we offended with our cussing. But
I'm not sorry.
Okay. Well, are there any other fun facts you wanted to mention or anything? Because this movie ran long and this podcast is probably running long and I apologize.
So likely one of the last collaborations between Spielberg and Williams.
I think it's time for Spielberg to put down the baton.
The baton.
Yeah, I think it's time for him to move on.
So the last Indiana Jones movie will be his last movie.
But Spielberg isn't doing... Oh, John Williams is doing the Indiana Jones. Yes. Yeah, John Williams, you know, he has done his time. He's done some great work. I think he needs to retire.
I don't
understand why people in Hollywood like can't retire. Like why don't you just retire? I don't know, but it's like weird almost. It's like, oh, we're gonna miss you, you know?
That's
which
true,
is true, but yeah. Like they should be allowed to retire like normal people.
Yeah, like
and they got more money than normal people do when they retire.
Some do. Some just blow
it. Some blow it all.
But yeah, David Lynch for Best Supporting Actor.
He got nominated?
No, I'm just joking.
Be pretty cool. I wonder what like the shortest screen time is for an actor who's won like Best Actor, Best whatever.
I think it's Anthony Hopkins.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he deserved that.
Yeah, we talked about
that. We talked about that, but yeah. Okay, well, I think next week, the only movie left that we haven't already seen, even if we haven't talked about it on the podcast, that is nominated for Best Picture is Women Talking. So we're going to do Women Talking. So get excited. We're going to talk about some talking.
We're going to talk about some women.
That's very appropriate for a podcast. Let's talk about some. That's what you're excited about.
Yeah, baby.
Okay, we're going to go now. Bye.
Bye.
The way that you just said bye sounded like you were in pain. Okay, bye. Maybe be a little cheerier this time.
Bye.